हरिदि ओ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chapter 4, The Confidential Reasons for Lord Chaitanya's Appearance. Okay, text 82, page 105. Radha is the one who gives pleasure to Govinda. She is also the enchantress of Govinda. She is the be-all and end-all of Govinda, and the crest jewel of all his consorts. The transcendental goddess Srimati Radharani is the direct counterpart of Lord Sri Krishna. She is the central figure for all the goddesses of fortune. She possesses all the attractiveness to attract the all-attractive personality of Godhead. She is the primeval internal potency of the Lord. Footnote 34. This text is from Brihad Gautamiya Tantra. Riti. Verses 84 to 95 are an expansion on verse 83. Devi means resplendent and most beautiful. Or else it means the lovely abode of the worship and love sports of Lord Krishna. Krishnamayi means one whose within and without are Lord Krishna. She sees Lord Krishna everywhere she casts her glance. Or Krishnamayi means she is identical with Lord Krishna, for she embodies the mellows of love. The energy of Lord Krishna is identical with him. Her worship, Aradhana, consists of fulfilling the desires of Lord Krishna. Therefore, the Puranas call her Radhika. Right? So to worship Radharani is you try to fulfill the desires of Krishna. That's worship of Radharani. Right? So therefore, she's known as Radhika. Right? So that aspect, that's something we can do, and we see is that she sees Lord Krishna wherever she casts her glance. So everything will remind her of Krishna. Because everything's coming from Krishna. Everything's expanding from Krishna. So, on some aspect, she's seeing that connection to Krishna. How it can be used for Krishna. How devotees are worshipping Krishna. So she's seeing everything in that context. So that's also something we can apply ourselves to. Does that make sense? As servants. Srila Prabhupada. The name Radha is derived from the root word Aradhana, which means worship. The personality who excels all in worshipping Krishna may therefore be called Radhika, the greatest servitor. And next verse. Truly the personality of Godhead has been worshipped by her. Therefore Lord Govinda, being pleased, has brought her to a lonely spot, leaving us all behind. Footnote 35. This text is from Srimad Bhagavatam 10:30-28. Therefore, Radha is Paramadevata, the supreme goddess, and she is worshipable by everyone. She is the protectress of all, and she is the mother of the entire universe. I have already explained the meaning of Sarva Lakshmi. Radha is the original source of all the goddesses of fortune, or Sarva Lakshmi indicates that she fully represents the six opulences of Krishna, right? Because it says she's the full counterpart. Right, so Krishna has the opulences, and then she represents all those opulences being used to worship Krishna. Therefore, she is the supreme energy of Lord Krishna. The word Sarva Kanti indicates that all beauty and luster rest in her body. All the Lakshmis derive their beauty from her. Kanti may also mean all the desires of Lord Krishna. All the desires of Lord Krishna rest in Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radhika fulfills all the desires of Lord Krishna. This is the meaning of Sarva Kanti. Lord Krishna enchants the world, but Sri Radha enchants even him. Therefore, she is the supreme goddess of all. Sri Radha is the full power, and Lord Krishna is the possessor of full power. The two are not different, as evidenced by the revealed scriptures. They are indeed the same, just as musk and its scent are inseparable, or as fire and its heat are non-different. Thus Radha and Lord Krishna are one, yet they have taken two forms to enjoy the mellows of pastimes. Right? So you have the scent and the musk are non-different, but at the same time they have two different forms, two different aspects. Same with the fire and the heat. Right? So they're non-different, you can't separate them, but at the same time is you can tell the difference. Right? So then you can have interaction. To promulgate prema bhakti, devotional service and love of Godhead, Krishna appeared as Sri Krishna Chaitanya with the mood and complexion of Sri Radha. Thus I have explained the meaning of the fifth verse. Verses 101 to 120, commentary on verse 6. To explain the sixth verse, I shall first give a hint of its meaning. The Lord came to propagate Sankirtana. That is an external purpose, as I have already indicated. There is a principal cause for Lord Krishna's appearance. It grows from his own engagements as the foremost enjoyer of loving exchanges. That most confidential cause is threefold. Sarup Damodar has revealed it. Sarup Gosai is the most intimate associate of the Lord. He therefore knows all these topics well. Srila Prabhupada. Prior to the Lord's acceptance of the renounced order, Purushottama Bhattacharya, a resident of Navadvipa, desired to enter the renounced order of life. Therefore he left home and went to Benares, where he accepted the position of Brahmacharya from a Mayavadi sannyasi. When he became a Brahmacharya, he was given the name Sri Damodar Sarup. He left Benares shortly thereafter without taking sannyas, and he came to Neelachal, Jagannath Puri, where Lord Chaitanya was staying. He met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu there and dedicated his life to the service of the Lord. He became Lord Chaitanya's secretary and constant companion. He used to enhance the pleasure potency of the Lord by singing appropriate songs, which were very much appreciated. Sarup Damodar could understand the secret mission of Lord Chaitanya, and it was by his grace only that all the devotees of Lord Chaitanya could know the real purpose of the Lord. Sarup Damodar has been identified as Lalita Devi, the second expansion of Radharani. However, text 160 of Kavikarnapuran's authoritative Gaur Ganodesh Deepika describes Sarup Damodar as the same Vishakha Devi who serves the Lord in Goloka Vrindavan. Therefore, it is understood that Sri Sarup Damodar is the direct expansion of Radharani, who helps the Lord experience the attitude of Radharani. Right? So, if the point is that the mood is there so that all these aspects can be appreciated. Right? Somebody say?
It seems that initiation from Mayavadi sannyasi is not unusual in the time.
Yeah, because that they were prominent and all that, so they were practicing. The Vaishnavas may not have been very prominent in this way. So if you want to take sannyas, you went and took from them. Because you just go take sannyas and then go do whatever you want to do.
The sannyas guru is not so prominent?
Not really. I mean, the point is it's something that you get it. In other words, the sannyas guru is to see that you actually have the qualities to practice sannyas. Right? And then having that, you get sannyas, so it's a bona fide lineage. But because it's an individual aspect, then you go off on your own. It's not like brahmacharis who stay in the ashram. Means if they want to stay, they can. Like you see with Prakashananda Saraswati, you have 10,000 sannyasis staying there. But if you go off, then there's no complaint either. Like that. It's not as strong, it doesn't have that strong of a connection. Like that. Because in the Vedic sense, these things are connected with the ashram, just like the Upanayanam in the Vedic sense, is that you become the student and all that. So it means it's for instruction, for learning, for studying in that. It doesn't have the same depth as the Pancharatrik initiation. Does that make sense? It's because that's for, because the one is, that's in the Vedic, so it's for being able to follow properly that ashram. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, just like marriage, then you go through a ceremony. Mm-hmm. You know, people of the family members, others have gauged that you're qualified, and then the priest, then you have the ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense. Yeah. So it's basically, it's a samskar. Like that. I mean, so of course, they're all, even initiation is a samskar, but the point is we'll generally put that into a spiritual category.
Yes.
The others are that which will create a favorable attitude for serving Krishna. So, yeah. Okay, then Krishnaskar Vyas Goswami continues. The heart of Lord Chaitanya is the image of Sri Radhika's emotions. Thus, feelings of pleasure and pain arise constantly therein. Srila Prabhupada. Lord Chaitanya's heart was full of the feelings of Srimati Radharani, and his appearance resembled hers. Srirup Damodar has explained his attitude as Radha Bhava Murti, the attitude of Radharani. One who engages in sense gratification on the mental platform can hardly understand Radha Bhava. But one who is freed from the demands of sense gratification can understand it. Radha Bhava must be understood from the Goswamis, those who are actually controllers of the senses. From such authorized sources, it is to be known that the attitude of Srimati Radharani is the highest perfection of conjugal love, which is the highest of the five transcendental mellows, and it is the complete perfection of love, Krishna. These transcendental affairs can be understood on two platforms. One is called elevated, and the other is called super-elevated. The loving affairs exhibited in Dwarka are the elevated form. The super-elevated position is reached in the manifestations of the pastimes of Vrindavan. The attitude of Lord Chaitanya is certainly super-elevated. From the life of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, an intelligent person engaged in pure devotional service can understand that he always felt separation from Krishna within himself. In that separation, he sometimes felt he had found Krishna and was enjoying the meeting. The significance of this separation and meeting is very specific. If someone tries to understand the exalted position of Lord Chaitanya without knowing this, he is sure to misunderstand it. One must first become fully self-realized. Otherwise, one may misidentify the Lord as Nagara, or enjoyer of the damsels of Braja, thus committing the mistake of rasa-basa, or overlapping understanding. Because rasa-basa means you're taking one situation and another thing that doesn't match, and then trying to connect the two. So if one doesn't understand, one will think that he's just enjoying that mood of enjoying the gopis, when no, he's in the mood of the gopis. Like that. So he's not Nagara, because Krishna's Nagara. So he's taking the mood of the servants of Nagara. Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami. In the final portion of his pastimes, Lord Chaitanya was obsessed with the madness of separation from Lord Krishna. He acted in erroneous ways and talked deliriously. Just as Radhika went mad at the sight of Uddhava, so Lord Chaitanya was obsessed day and night with the madness of separation. At night, he talked incoherently in grief, with his arms around Srirup Damodar's neck. He spoke out his heart in ecstatic inspiration. Whenever a particular sentiment arose in his heart, Srirup Damodar satisfied him by singing songs or reciting verses of the same nature. Right, because there's a mood there, so you bring out things that enhance that mood. Right, so then various verses or various songs then would be supported. To analyze these pastimes is not necessary now. Later I shall describe them in detail. Formerly in Braja, Lord Krishna displayed three ages, namely childhood, boyhood, and adolescence. His adolescence is especially significant. Parental affection made his childhood fruitful. His boyhood was successful with his friends. In youth, he tasted the essence of rasa, fulfilling his desires and pastimes like the rasa dance of Srimati Radhika and other gopis. Right? So these three different ages, then you see is that it has its glory. So in the youngest, in the Kumara, then being with Mother Jashoda, that brings out all the specialness is coming out there. It attains its perfection there. Then in Pauganda, it's then all his pastimes with his cowherd boy friends. that you see him there killing all the demons and all the different things that they did. But then in adolescence, then that's going to be his pastimes with the gopis. That then brings out its pinnacle. In his youth, Lord Krishna made all three of his ages and the entire universe successful by his pastimes of amorous love like the Rasa dance. Quote, Lord Madhusudana enjoyed his youth with pastimes on autumn nights in the midst of the jewel-like milkmaids. Thus he dispelled all the misfortunes of the world. Footnote 36. This is a verse from the Vishnu Purana 5.13.60. Lord Krishna made Srimati Radharani close her eyes in shame before her friends by his words relating their amorous activities on the previous night. Then he showed the highest limit of cleverness in drawing pictures of dolphins in various playful sports on her breasts. In this way, Lord Hari made his youth successful by performing pastimes in the bushes with Sri Radha and her friends. Footnote 37. This is a verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 2.1.2.31 of Srila Rupa Goswami. O Purnamasi, if Lord Hari had not descended in Mathura with Srimati Radharani, this entire creation, and especially Cupid, the demigod of love, would have been useless. Footnote 38. This verse is spoken by Sri Vrindadevi in the Vidagdha Madhava 7.3 of Srila Rupa Goswami. Even though Lord Krishna, the abode of all mellows, had previously in this way chewed the essence of the mellows of love, still he was unable to fulfill three desires, although he made efforts to taste them. Verses 107 to 120. So now verses 121 to 136. The first desire, to experience Radha's love. I shall explain his first desire. Krishna says, I am the primary cause of all rasas. I am the full spiritual truth and am made of full joy. But the love of Srimati Radharani drives me mad. I do not know the strength of Radha's love, with which she always overwhelms me. The love of Radhika is my teacher, and I am her dancing pupil. Her prema makes me dance various novel dances. Oh, my beloved friend Vrinda, where are you coming from? I am coming from the feet of Sri Hari. Where is he? In the forest on the bank of Radha Kunda. What is he doing there? He is learning dancing. Who is his master? Your image, Radha, revealing itself in every tree and creeper in every direction, is roaming like a skillful dancer, making him dance behind. Footnote 39. This is the text from Govinda Lilamrita, 877 of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Krishna continues. This is from Govinda Lilamrita, right? But here it's not describing as such pastimes that we're used to. You know, understand the details of the pastime and who did what and all these kind of things. It's bringing out these fine points of the mood and the attitude. Does that make sense? Like that. Yeah, so that's why it's on another level. That's the principle of it.
Means that those scriptures, they don't describe those details. They just hint at them.
The point is when it's about a mood, you need to give details.
You need?
Do you need?
No.
No, so that's the whole point. Means if it will enhance a mood, then it might give a detail. But the point is details aren't the point. It's about tasting. So it's not the aspect of attracting and these things like that. Like Krishna performs his pastimes. So we see him, they're wonderful, they're amazing. We're attracted. But here, this is then in the platform of taste of those pastimes. What is attractive? That's why it said these are just for... this is not common reading. Like that. Because it's about the taste that they're having. We might read it and whatever little bit here and there of pastimes or some information we may get, we can add that to our repertoire of information. But the point is the reason the book's written for that taste, that we won't appreciate. Does that make sense? Yeah. And that's why it was think Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur asked Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur if he could print the Gita, Govinda Lilamrita. I think he says you can make one copy for himself, maybe one for it, like that. But go ahead, print. I'm not sure there wasn't three and there was somebody else, but that was it. So the main point he was making is that it's not for public distribution. Krishna continues, whatever pleasure I am getting, whatever I get from tasting my love for Srimati Radharani, she tastes 10 million times more than me by her love, just as I am the abode of all mutually contradictory characteristics. So Radha's love is always full of similar contradictions. Right? So he is the abode of all contradictions, because he being the original source of everything, all avatars, all the Shaktis, all the everything. That means all the contradictions that are there, because all the expansions, they're all different. So at all this difference, there's going to be contradiction between one manifestation and another. But they're all perfectly reconciled in Krishna. Right? So that's with him as a person. But Srimati Radharani, she's tasting all that. And that's creating all these contradictory moods that are perfectly reconciled in her love for Krishna. So Radha's love is all-pervading, leaving no room for expansion. But still, it is expanding constantly, right? So that's the original, is that that mood is there, and it's all about Krishna, so it takes up all the space. There is no space for anything else. So we see in the spiritual platform, that works perfectly. Right? No?
I have a doubt that I was thinking, once the mood is established, that details actually enhance the mood.
They can. But the point is you don't necessarily have to bring out a detail if people understand the context. You understand? If they understand the context, then you just allude to it. But at the same time, sometimes it brings, like we saw before, is that in this way, Lord Krishna made his youth successful by performing past... Oh, no, wait a minute. Lord Krishna made Srimati Radharani close her eyes in shame before her friends as by his words relating their amorous activities on the previous night. So in here, by bringing out detail, it brings out a new rasa. It means they've already tasted that, but now bringing out amongst the friends, then brings shame there, the other moods of the other gopis, and that whole exchange that will happen there because of this. You know, the rivalry between them, and this all these different things will come up. So you're just furthering taste on taste. So in that way, the detail will have a meaning. But my point is it doesn't necessarily have to, because here it's just giving this mood of just who what's going on, where have you come from, this and that, and it's just he's learning dancing from all these things. In other words, everything that she's done, he's just following all that, and he's learning in this way to follow her mood. Does that make sense? So sometimes it will be subtle, sometimes it may be there, but it's only because it brings out the rasa between him and the gopis. So it's detail that will be appreciated in the circle of the gopis. Right? It's not other detail. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why then the mechanics may or may not make sense. They don't have to. Does that make sense? You know, there doesn't have to be a conclusion of the pastime and mechanically. Like when he's doing the Dana Kali Leela, is there a conclusion? Right? He's stopping them that, you know, he can't go this way, you know, they have to pay tax. And this and that until it comes to a particular point of rasa, and then it moves on. We'll see this if we get to the dramas. They don't have to, like in the Western drama, have to have all the things match up, everything has to do it. It just has to be that the rasa is developing, and when it comes, and so the exchange is to bring out rasa. And when it comes to a particular point that you want, then it may switch into something else. Does that make sense? So the detail is supporting. It's not a major aspect. For us, we hear the detail, then we'll take that as very important. That's what will attract us. But here it becomes just a support for the taste. Does that make sense? So that's why the ones they can tell all the details, all the this and that. That doesn't mean that the taste is there. They're very good at it, it's very attractive and that kind of thing, but at the same time, as we have to see, is that the mood of that taste is the main thing. That'll be the difference. So that's what's being brought out here. Right? And it's based on, like it says there, Radharani, everywhere she looks, she only sees Krishna. So that means it's that topmost platform of everything is Krishna at the same time as he is different, because she can see Krishna in anything. So that means the non-difference. But she's feeling separation from Krishna because Krishna as a person is different from that. And so therefore, that's the perfection of Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's already appreciated, so then one can see. Yeah?
Can you say that it is also on the other side, Krishna is feeling separation from Radharani?
No, he can also feel, but the point is whatever it is, hers is greater. The experience she has is greater than his. That's what he always mentions. She tastes whatever pleasure I get from tasting my love for Srimati Radharani, whether that's in Sambhog or in the Vibhralamba, she tastes 10 million times more than me by her love. Right? There's certainly nothing greater than her love. But her love is devoid of pride. That is the sign of its greatness. Nothing is purer than her love, but its behavior is always perverse and crooked. Perverse here means that it's not following a straight line. It doesn't mean it's distorted. Here it just means it doesn't go in a straight way, because that's how generally we think things move, is straight. That's the logical in all this. But the point is here it's always moving. It's given like a thunderbolt. It's moving in one particular direction, but it goes in zigzags. Yeah.
What is all the Sanchari and Vyabhichari Bhava?
Sanchari and?
Vyabhichari Bhava.
Isn't Sanchari and Vyabhichari same?
Same. The definition is Sanchari means moving, Vyabhichari means moving in opposite to the.
Oh, okay, so that's why it can be called one way or the other. Oh, okay. You got that?
No.
He was saying is that in the definition, it's the same ones are called Sanchari or Vyabhichari.
Right.
He's saying one is Sanchari is?
It's moving.
It's moving. That is, it's moving. It's always like that. And the Vyabhichari means it's
moving in opposite to the style.
It's moving opposite to the style. So one is bringing out the movement and the other is bringing out the opposite. And so that, therefore, that's where it's adding. So it can be called by either of those. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's interesting, because then you know what they're bringing out when they mention it.
So when they define Vyabhichara, that means that's a particular mood which is opposite of a sthayi, and then Sanchari is just moving.
Yeah, just it means it's moving, it's creating some, because you have one mood and then these other things come up that create other things that are happening. You know? So, yeah. Yes, so that's the thing. It's always moving, because the aspect is Rupa Goswami, when he opens, then he talks about the feminine nature, that it's always contrary, it's always elusive, and it's always has this aspect of shyness. So which one is more prominent, what's the combinations and all that. So the contradictions that we're saying, the mutual contradictory characteristics, then the intensity is so great in Srimati Radharani. Krishna, they're all there, it's all reconciled in him. So it has the basis for that. The Srimati Radharani is the one who brings these out, and therefore then increases the taste. Are we good? Or?
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, see, it's just as technical as Vedanta Sutra, but now it's on a different level. Okay. All glories to. Oh, okay. All glories to Radha's love for Krishna, the enemy of the demon Mura. Although it is all pervading, it tends to increase at every moment. Right? Because all-pervading means it's just there, but it still is increasing. Even though it's unlimited, it's still increasing. Right? These are the contradictory aspects. Although it is important, it is devoid of pride. Right? Because generally, as we do something important, then we're proud. But here, it's important that it doesn't. There's no pride. And although it is pure, it is always beset with duplicity. Right? Because if you say someone's duplicious, we generally mean it's not pure. But here it has that duplicity because it's presented one way, it's tasted in another, and all these different things. So that's the whole, why you see is that the demigods are talking about these contradictions all being reconciled in Krishna, because they're beyond their intellect to be able to work together, and in Krishna they're perfectly reconciled. But that's not the perfection of that. That's, you know, him as God, yes, that does happen. That's the way he is. That's his nature. But here it's that on this platform, then all those things, all these technical points of philosophy, these are all then applied as rasa in Braj. Right? That'll just be to some degree, you know, that's reasonable that you can relate to, but, you know, with devotion is revealed in Vaikuntha. But in Braj, then all these contradictory things are all going on, you know, just to bring all these things out. So then the idea that the Braj Vasis don't know what's going on, these are the, how you say, the babblings of fools, we shall say. Because if they can work with this stuff, what goes on here is, how you say, as Tamal Krishnamurti would say, it's just easy, you know, cream cheese. It's just, you know. Like you said, if you can manage in India and survive, then the rest of the world is cream cheese. It's just so easy, you know, like that. So the same way, you can deal with Rasa there, dealing with the stuff here is not a problem. Footnote 40. This is a verse from the Dhanakeli Komudi of Srila Rupa Goswami. Krishna continues. Sri Radhika is the highest abode of that love, and I am its only object. I taste the bliss to which the object of love is entitled. But the pleasure of, right, no, in other words, he can taste the full bliss that the object of her love is entitled to. Right? But the pleasure of Radha, the abode of that love, is 10 million times greater. Right? So the love she's entitled to is greater than what Krishna's getting. My mind races to taste the pleasure experienced by the abode, but I cannot taste it. Right? Because she's the abode, means she's the ashraya of that love for Krishna. Even by my best efforts, how may I taste it? If sometime I can be the abode of that love, only then may I taste its joy. So that's the whole point. He's tried in so many ways, he can't. So the only way is to be the abode of that love. Srila Prabhupada. Vishaya and Ashraya are two very significant words relating to the reciprocation between Krishna and his devotee. The devotee is called Ashraya, and his beloved, Krishna, is the Vishaya. Different ingredients are involved in the exchange of love between the Ashraya and Vishaya, which are known as Vibhava, Anubhava, Satvikabhava, and Vyavichari. Vibhava is divided into the two categories, Alambana and Udipana. Alambana may be further divided into Ashraya and Vishaya, right? So because the Vibhava is going to be what's the cause for that interaction to come up. The taste, the rasa to be tasted, right? Because when this is, that means you have this Stai Bhav, but unless that Bhava has an opportunity to be expressed, in other words, it'll be through the secondary aspects, right? So that's what they're for, is to bring up opportunities to taste that exchange, or have that exchange between Krishna and the devotees, right? So then, in part of that Alambana, then that's the Ashraya and Vishaya, right? Means you have to have Krishna, who is where the love is directed towards, and the devotee, who is the shelter of that love, right? And then we'll see is that the Udipan means then the direct actual situations or activities or something that cause that love to come up between the two of them. Right? Yes.
In Jiva, we came to material world because of our desire to feel what was. Our body feels controllable and joy. Lord Chaitanya came here because he wanted to feel part of the water and joy of this world. Can we say that
We're small Chaitanya. Little Lord Chaitanyas? That we're small Lord Chaitanyas?
I want to ask, maybe say the appearance of Lord Chaitanya proves to Jiva that devotee can enjoy more than enjoy and control.
Oh yeah, from that angle, yes, yes. The devotees enjoy more than the Lord, yes. So then why you're playing around with this trying to be the Lord and enjoy? It means you get more enjoyment by being servant to the Lord. Yes, from that angle you could take that. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting, huh? Okay. In the 11 affairs of Radha and Krishna, Radharani is the ashraya feature and Krishna is the vishaya. The transcendental consciousness of the Lord tells him, I am Krishna and I experience pleasure as the vishaya. The pleasure enjoyed by Radharani, the ashraya, is many times greater than the pleasure I feel. Therefore, to feel the pleasure of the ashraya category, Lord Krishna appeared as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it's just very interesting. Prabhupada puts it back into the technical to make it clear. Thinking in this way, Lord Krishna was curious to taste that love. His eager desire for that love increasingly blazed in his heart. So that's the first one, to taste the love, right? So, to experience Radha's love, right? What is this love that she's doing? Then, verses 137 to 159, the second desire, to experience his full sweetness. That is one desire. Now please hear of another. Seeing his own beauty, Lord Krishna began to consider. Sri Krishna continues, my sweetness is wonderful, infinite, and full. No one in the three worlds can find its limit. Only Radhika, by the strength of her love, tastes all the nectar of my sweetness. Even though it's unlimited and no one can find the limit of it, she tastes everything. And it's always increasing, so it's always, her taste is always increasing. Although Radha's love is pure like a mirror, its purity increases at every moment. My sweetness also has no room for expansion, yet it shines before that mirror in newer and newer beauty. There is constant competition between my sweetness and the mirror of Radha's love. They both go on increasing, but neither knows defeat. Right? It's not that one defeats the other, they're both. Right, yeah. My sweetness is always newer and newer. Devotees taste it according to their own respective love, right? So that's the point. They taste according to their respective love. Does that make sense? So all this thing is, oh, what's rasa and what is that? What am I going to take? What, you know, what position I can get and all that. It's nice, you know, but we have to understand that that's actually a position of liberation. What am I going to get from this relationship with Krishna? Right? You know, what abode I'm in, so I want to make sure I'm in the top. What position as associate, I want to make sure I'm at the top. Things like that, you know, what kind of form am I going to, you know, am I going to be, you know, it's going to be respect. All these things, we have to understand that it has to be careful that that has that aspect, that tinge of liberation to it. So that's why one doesn't take that too deeply. Right? So the thing is that if we're tasting according to our sweetness, how much means we're hearing here the unlimited. We're not unlimited. Krishna is unlimited. Radharani is unlimited. Right? Their moods can expand unlimitedly. The character, the qualities, their pastimes. So, therefore, what's the whole point of tasting it according to our own position? And making that the prominent element. Why would we do that? You know what I'm saying? So in other words, we're looking at secondary elements of devotional service, and they're connected to Krishna, and they're perfect. But we're taking those as the primary aspect, rather than the taste of prema that is there between the Lord and the devotees. Does Does that make sense? So now, the point is if you're following in the footsteps of those who are serving Srimati Radharani, you're connected to that taste, which is way beyond whatever our taste would be. So the worry is not about this or that. The worry is how to be a servant of the servant of the servant of Srimati Radharani. That's the whole point. If Lord Chaitanya is trying to taste, if Krishna is trying to taste it, coming as Lord Chaitanya, why wouldn't we, and we then, therefore, coming in that line, it's about that service too. If we're serving Lord Chaitanya, means we're serving Radharani. So we serve, our Acharya is serving Radharani. Does it make sense? You good? Yeah? Okay. If I see my sweetness in a mirror, I am tempted to taste it, but nevertheless I cannot. If I deliberate on a way to taste it, I find that I hanker for the position of Radhika. Right, so her love is that mirror. So he sees it, but he, you know, like a mirror, you can't get inside the mirror. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada. Krishna's attractiveness is wonderful and unlimited. No one can know the end of it. Srimati Radharani alone can relish such extensiveness from her position in the Ashraya category. The mirror of Srimati Radharani's transcendental love is perfectly clear. Yet it appears clearer and clearest in the transcendental method of understanding Krishna. In the mirror of Radharani's heart, the transcendental features of Krishna appear increasingly new and fresh. In other words, the attraction of Krishna increases in proportion to the understanding of Srimati Radharani. So as she's tasting it, he increases, and she tastes that, and it just keeps on going. Each tries to supersede the other. Neither wants to be defeated in increasing the intensity of love. Desiring to understand Radharani's attitude of increasing love, Lord Krishna appeared to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So why also would this be brought up now? Because we'd be thinking, you know, this is a very nice thing. Why isn't this? Means, of course, we all have heard of these things from the beginning. But why in the studies it would come now? Right? Because here it is that intensity of love has to be able to go deeper and deeper and deeper. That means there's the greater and greater amount of surrender. That means there has to be that faith, that trust. Right? In the material platform, then things here, we don't trust them that well. They've never done very nice for us. And so, therefore, the tendency towards the, you know, towards either we're foolish enough to think something else will make us happy, and that we try to commit, but we're not really going to really commit to something completely, even if it's going wrong. Right? Or the impersonal aspect that we give up on it and think that there's something else, and that we just give it all up, and so the activities and all that. So we have to be beyond that position of karma and jnana to really appreciate. And the more we become, the more we appreciate. Right? So, therefore then, that to be able to go, to give that trust, to go that deeply into this, then we have to have trust that Krishna and his devotees and the relationships there, that eternal position is always available for someone who surrenders. We have to have that faith. So, yeah? Good. Desiring to understand Radharani's attitude of increasing love, Lord Krishna appeared as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Right? So increasing love, right? So what is that love? Experience Radha's love, then the experience, the sweetness of that, how it's ever increasing that love. Who manifests an abundance of sweetness greater than mine, which has never been experienced before, and which causes wonder to all. Alas, I myself, my mind bewildered upon seeing this beauty, impetuously desire to enjoy it like Srimati Radharani. Srila Prabhupada. This text is from the Lalita Madhava, 834 of Srila Rupa Goswami. It was spoken by Lord Krishna when he saw the beauty of his own reflection in a jeweled fountain in Dwarka. Right? So just what he sees is just so, he wants to taste, but he wants to enjoy it like Srimati Radharani. The beauty of Krishna has one natural strength. It thrills the heart of all men and women, beginning with Lord Krishna himself. All minds are attracted by hearing his sweet voice. Why would everybody be attracted to him? Because even he's attracted. Right? Whatever the characteristics he has, that's what the others have. All minds are attracted by hearing his sweet voice and flute, or by seeing his beauty. Even Lord Krishna himself makes efforts to taste that sweetness. The thirst of one who always drinks the nectar of that sweetness is never satisfied, right? So it means the whole idea is here, that attractiveness to this, now that as one starts to see that there's something beyond the material concepts, then here you see, here's something that's unlimited, that's beyond what we're ever talking about. So happiness pales here. This is you know, transcendental ecstasy. Right? You know, so this is actually, yeah. The thirst of one who drinks the nectar of that sweetness is never satisfied. Rather, that thirst increases constantly. Such a person, being unsatisfied, begins to blaspheme Lord Brahma, saying that he does not know the art of creating well and is simply inexperienced. Right? Because he just was born his first time around, so, you know, that's what they're thinking, that he's not doing a good job. Because he doesn't know rasa. See, he's creating based on, you know, the mechanics of the universe and the universal form and all the things and the karma, you know, the desire of the living entities and all those things. But they're pointing out that when it comes to rasa, now he's making some mistakes. Right? But that's the way it is, because otherwise then how would that separation, the glories of the gopis come out unless that seeming fault was there? Right? He has not given millions of eyes to see the beauty of Krishna. He has given only two eyes. And even those eyes blink. How then shall I see the lovely face of Krishna? The gopis said, O Krishna, when you go to the forest during the day, and we do not see your sweet face, which is surrounded by beautifully curling hair, half a second becomes as long as an entire age for us. We consider the Creator, who has put eyelids on the eyes we use for seeing you, to be simply a fool. Footnote 31. This verse is spoken by the gopis in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:31-15. The gopis saw their beloved Krishna Kurukshetra after a long separation. They secured and embraced him in their hearts, through their eyes, and they attained a joy so intense that not even perfect yogis can attain it, right? Even though they're totally fixed in their udvarita brahmacharis, they can't come to such a position. The gopis cursed the Creator for creating eyelids that interfered with their vision. Footnote 42. This text is from Srimad Bhagavatam 10:82-39. There is no consummation for the eyes other than the sight of Krishna. Whoever sees him is the most fortunate indeed. The gopis said, O friends, those eyes that see the beautiful faces of the son of Maharaj Nanda are certainly fortunate, as these two sons enter the forest, surrounded by their friends, driving the cows before them. They hold their flutes to their mouths and glance lovingly upon the residents of Vrindavan. For those who have eyes, we think there is no greater object of vision. Right? So it's the whole thing, just Krishna, the interaction with the devotees. So they're appreciating how the residents, all of them, he's interacting with, and just how the beauty and then the whole scene. Right? So it's something like that.
In this case, it's only gopi appreciate the gopa. There's no competition at all.
There's no competition like that. Yeah, in Vrindavan there's no competition because everybody, you know, respects and all that. Where it's mentioning in rasa, which we'll see come up in the Nectar Devotion, where one rasa is the enemy of the other, it just means that that rasa itself, that you can't manifest the externals of it. Like when Mother Jashoda's around or the coward boy's around, you can't manifest the conjugal rasa. Right? And so then that brings out the taste within conjugal rasa. In other words, being in a situation where you'd like to manifest the conjugal rasa, but you can't because there's other people around and all that, enhances the conjugal rasa. Right, nowadays they'll say it's all its instruction, it's our rights and our this and that, but then what about everybody else's? You know, because they also have relationships and all that. Because of the internal aspect of the conjugal rasa, it doesn't have a problem of going internal at that point. And the external then matches whatever's there, whatever the prominence would be. Right? So, that's the whole point, is that these things that seemingly said, this is enemy with this, this is friend, this is neutral. But that means how the rasas can come out and be tasted externally. Does that make sense? Otherwise you have to hide. It means that internally you can continue to taste. But you can't manifest it. You can't show the symptoms. Like that. But that itself gives a taste. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada, like the gopis, one can see Krishna continuously if one is fortunate enough. In the Brahma Samhita, it is said that sages whose eyes have been smeared with the ointment of pure love can see the form of Shyamasundara, Krishna, continuously in the centers of their hearts. So that's the point. You can always see Krishna there. But the point is you want to also, seeing that, you're inspired, you want to, because you want to render some service, you want to express. That's where the secondary comes in. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's where there'll be the rules and all that. So these rules are based on rasa, right? So people, you know, to be able to have a whole community together, that means then for all these different rasas to work together, then you have to have the etiquettes that then balance them all. But if you don't follow that, you say, oh, that's just old fashioned and this and that. Yes, you can do whatever you like, but how is that? How is that? People do whatever they like. Conjugal rasa in public. How is that new? They're thinking, oh, we're up to date. The dogs have been doing that forever. And you're only figuring it out now? You know, come on, get it together. You know, that's lame. You know? So that's the whole problem is that all it is you break down. Now you won't get these other rasas manifesting. Because as soon as you manifest the conjugal, the others just disappear. Right, and while they're going the other direction, they all say, "Get a room," right? You know, like that. You know, so that's why that term is there, because it's not appreciated. Right? Plus, how developed can it be? Right? Some lust can be there, but the fine points can't be expressed. So it's not an entire deal. So neither can that rasa be nicely tasted, nor can the others. It's just that one has no control. So therefore, one can't see what to apply where and when. So these aren't people who taste rasa. Does that make sense? So for them, if they're in public and they're expressing it, when they're in private, it won't really be much different. So there's no more depth than rasa. So it's not that they're gaining something so special. But, and it's not that they're going to... Yeah. This text from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.21.7 was sung by gopis on the advent of the Shraddha season. Right? So Prabhupada's pointing out that anybody can, by developing that love for Krishna, come to the same platform, always being able to see Krishna within the core of the heart. So makes sense. So it's something that is attainable. Otherwise, why would this mission be here and all that? It's the external reason. It means internal reason, Lord Chaitanya is tasting it. External reason is everybody else can also qualify so that they can also join and taste it. Right? So it's not a bad external reason. Right? Good. The women of Mathura said, "What austerities must the gopis have performed? With their eyes they always drink the nectar of the form of Lord Krishna, which is the essence of loveliness and is not to be equaled or surpassed. That loveliness is the only abode of beauty, fame, and opulence. It is self-perfect, ever fresh, and extremely rare." Srila Prabhupada, this text of Srimad Bhagavatam 10.44.14 was spoken by the women of Mathura when they saw Krishna and Balaram in the arena with King Kamsa's great wrestlers Mustika and Chanura. The sweetness... Oh, okay. The sweetness. So this is they're seeing with the wrestlers, and they're still able to maintain the mood and all that. Does that make sense? So that's why when people say, "Oh, if you read these, then there's no taste and all that," that means you're that's there's no rasa there. It's very little. You can't say it's major. They may try to present themselves as a major, you know, taster of rasa, but no, they're very beginning stage because. Only when it's in a specific thing it'll work. We'll see this when we most likely tomorrow or something when, in the Madhurya Kadambini. When it gets down to taste, it'll define the two kinds of taste. One that's limited by only certain circumstances you can taste, and the other is any circumstance you can taste. So here, they're saying Krishna and Balaram in the wrestling arena with Mustika and Chanura, and this is their mood, their attitude. Like that. As we see before, the gopis, it's not that now they're tasting, you know, friendship rasa or something like that. No, they're still tasting. Krishna's so wonderful. All these other aspects are there. If conjugal means all the other rasas are within it, you can appreciate any of these positions. Because they all add to the conjugal rasa for them. So, yeah. The sweetness of Lord Krishna is unprecedented, and its strength is also unprecedented. Simply by one's hearing of such beauty, the mind becomes unsteady. Lord Krishna's own beauty attracts Lord Krishna himself, but because he cannot fully enjoy it, his mind remains full of sorrow. Like he cannot fully enjoy it. One is the taste that is there in that love, then to fully appreciate that taste that's there. Then verses 159 to 219. The third desire, to experience the selfless love of the gopis. This is the description of his second desire. Means what had before. Now please listen as I describe the third. This conclusion of rasa is extremely deep. Only Srup Damodar knows much about it. Anyone else who claims to know it must have heard it from him. For he was the most intimate companion of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The love of the gopi is called Rudhabhava. It is pure and spotless. It is not at any time lust. Right? Because lust means it's about the secondary aspects being lined up the way you want it and you enjoying that position. Right? While love then is about pleasing Krishna. That all these things are being arranged for Krishna's pleasure, but it's how it's unfolding for Krishna's pleasure and how Krishna is experiencing that arrangement. The pure love of the gopis has become celebrated by the name, quote-unquote, lust. The dear devotees of the Lord, headed by Sri Uddhava, desire to taste that love. Footnote 43. This is a verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.2.85. Lust and love have different characteristics, just as iron and gold have different natures. Srila Prabhupada. One should try to discriminate between sexual love and pure love, for they belong to different categories, with a gulf of difference between them. They are as different from one another as iron is from gold. You can say they're both metals, but the value of them is no comparison. Yeah. 165. The desire to gratify one's own senses is kama, lust. But the desire to please the senses of Lord Krishna is prema, love. 165. Srila Prabhupada. The revealed scriptures describe pure love as follows. If there is ample reason for the disillusion of a conjugal relationship, and yet such a disillusion does not take place, such a relationship of intimate love is called pure. Now that would be a nice sign right outside what do you call it? You know, where you go to apply for a divorce. The predominated gopis were bound to Krishna in such pure love. For them, there was no question of sexual love based on sense gratification. Their only engagement in life was to see Krishna happy in all respects, regardless of their own personal interests. They dedicated their souls only for the satisfaction of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, There was not the slightest tinge of sexual love between the gopis and Krishna. The author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita asserts with authority that sexual love is a matter of personal sense enjoyment. All the regulative principles in the Vedas pertaining to desires for popularity, fatherhood, wealth, and so on are different phases of sense gratification. Acts of sense gratification may be performed under the cover of public welfare, nationalism, religion, altruism, ethical codes, biblical codes, health directives, fruit of action, bashfulness, tolerance, personal comfort, liberation from material bondage, progress, family affection, or fear of social ostracism or legal punishment. Pretty much covered everything, right? But all these categories are different subdivisions of one substance, sense gratification. All such good acts are performed basically for one's own sense gratification. For one cannot sacrifice his personal interest while discharging these much advertised moral and religious principles. But above all, this is the transcendental stage in which one feels himself to be only the eternal servant of Krishna, the absolute personality of Godhead. All acts performed in this sense of servitude are called pure love of God because they are performed for the absolute sense gratification of Krishna. However, any act performed for the purpose of enjoying its fruits or results is an act of sense gratification. Such actions are visible sometimes in gross and sometimes in subtle forms. Right? So we see it's just the attitude, that devotional attitude. So prema, it's an attitude where it's just about pleasing Krishna. The environments that are there creating it, we would see, to create a nice environment for Krishna. Right? So in the material platform, we'd be creating this maybe to please someone, but we're being pleased by that. Yes. We're doing it so we'll be pleased, and we're enjoying the nice atmosphere also. Yes. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say someone makes some nice arrangement for, you know, some kind of program, an anniversary or birthday, but it's not that they don't enjoy the environment also. You know, or enjoy that, you know, people thought it was great arrangements or this or that. So there is the aspect that is about the other person, but ultimately it's about themselves. Because if they didn't get anything from it, they wouldn't do it. Right? So that's the thing, that's the difference here. That's why it opened with that point. Is that when there's the aspect of that you are willing to be involved in that service to Krishna, despite all things not necessarily working, that's pure love. Right? Yes.
So Jiva Goswami gives this definition about when this love comes. I think from Sahitya Darpana it quotes that apparently the lust and love seem similar because of the same type of external activities or actions. But as you said, the point that in material lust, even though it seems that person is selflessly working and thinking about other person's, you know, feelings and desires,
right,
it is actually for his own benefit. The checkpoint is, if he doesn't get, you know, benefit, then he will not serve the other person.
Yes.
But in the spiritual realm, then in the gopis, apparently seem to, you know, do activities for their own pleasure, but it's actually some pastime, but it's actually not for them, but it's because Krishna gets pleased by such activities.
Yes. So that's the Sahitya Darpana.
At that level, there is only the fifth level of consciousness.
The fifth level of consciousness, yes. Yes. It means that means the others, man, you can appreciate, but the point is this effect is only the fifth.
Yes.
Like that. What you see is the prominence in the other realms in Vaikuntha, it'll be the fourth.
Yes.
Not that prema is not there, but it won't have the prominence that the fourth level will have. You know, just that position of transcendence, of greatness, of awe, of, you know, that grandeur, of majesty, of all these things. You know, and depending on where you go, a little bit more and more sweetness is added, but it'll still have that element to it. But Braj, then, it's only that aspect of prema. It doesn't have anything to do with the greatness. Even though what is there in Braja is the greatest. There isn't anything greater than that. So he says, yeah, you just won't. It means all the opulence of Vaikuntha are in Braj. In fact, there's an area in Braj where the Vaikuntha lokas are. You know? And in the pastimes, then I think there's some pastime where they go there. And I think that's Koshi. I think that's there. That's all the Vaikunthas are there. So it's just in one portion of Braj. So even though they may be, how you say, you know, 49% of the spiritual world, they just are one corner of Vrindavan.
Is it the place where Mathura takes a bath?
Oh, is that place? Okay.
Yeah, I'm just asking.
Well, you have that aspect there. But I think also then he did that pastime in Koshi where he was like Kiridakshai Vishnu and like that. And I think Sri Dhamma took the form of Garuda and they went flying around a bit. The Cowherd boys were really impressed. You know? But there's no majesty. It's just like, cool. Wow. Yeah. That's just some fun, you know, something to do. Okay, next verse. The object of lust is only the enjoyment of one's own senses. But love caters to the enjoyment of Lord Krishna, and thus it is very powerful. Social customs, scriptural injunctions, bodily demands, fruit of action, shyness, patience, bodily pleasures, self-gratification, and the path of Arnasham Dharma, which is difficult to give up. The gopis have forsaken all these along with their families and suffered their relatives' punishment and scolding, all for the sake of serving Lord Krishna. They render loving service to him for the sake of his enjoyment. That is called firm attachment to Lord Krishna, right? Despite what's there, they still maintain that attachment. It is spotlessly pure, like a clean cloth that has no stain. Srila Prabhupada. The author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita advises everyone to give up all engagements of sense gratification and, like the gopis, dovetail oneself entirely with the will of the Supreme Lord. So the point is, whatever one's position is, you just take that position and render that position for Krishna's pleasure. It's the same, so it's the same principle. Right? You don't have to change what you're doing, you have to change the consciousness. That's the whole point. That is the ultimate instruction of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. We should be prepared to do anything and everything to please the Lord, even at the risk of violating the Vedic principles or ethical laws. That is the standard of love of Godhead. Such activities in pure love of Godhead are as spotless as white linen and has been completely washed. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur warns us in this connection that we should not mistakenly think that the idea of giving up everything implies the renunciation of duties necessary in relation to the body and mind. Even such duties are not sense gratification if they are undertaken in the spirit of service to Krishna. So that's the point, is they all there. Otherwise people use it as an excuse just to drop duties. Like that. Yeah, because otherwise you'll notice things that may be perceived as restricting us will so comfortably drop because we just chant Hare Krishna. And things that offer us facilities, even though we shouldn't have them, then we're so willing to take because we chant Hare Krishna. But we notice it always follows this pattern. It doesn't go the other way. Right there.
Yeah,
yes. Yeah, it's supposed to be self-realized. So it is some kind of realization of the self. But we haven't necessarily gotten to the consciousness level yet. We're still... But, you know, we're working on it. So.
Work in progress.
Yeah, work in progress, yes. Then, continuing with the next verse. Therefore, lust and love are quite different. Lust is like dense darkness, but love is like the bright sun. Thus there is not the slightest taint of lust in the gopis' love. Their relationship with Krishna is only for the sake of his enjoyment. Quote, O dearly beloved, your lotus feet are so soft that we place them gently on our breasts, fearing that your feet will be hurt. Our life rests only in you. Our minds therefore are filled with anxiety that your tender feet might be wounded by pebbles as you roam about in the forest path. Footnote 44. This text from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.32.21 was spoken by Lord Krishna. No, wait a minute. That's 45. I was going to say spoken by Lord Krishna. Okay, this text of Srimad Bhagavatam 10.31.19, okay, was spoken by the gopis when Krishna left them in the midst of the rasa dance. Better. Yeah.
Makes more sense.
Yeah, it does make more sense. Smoking the pot. Wow.
So we weren't supposed to do that.
Yeah.
So that we don't need to maintain it.
Sorry?
So that we don't need to maintain it so it becomes continuously for a while.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. But also it's easy. You just put a few pieces in.
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, because the other one, it burns too quickly.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Well, it's inspired by Vedanta Sutra.
Hmm?
Inspired by Vedanta Sutra pot.
Yes. Oh, okay. Yes, yes.
Bucket is only going to hell.
Yes, that's true. That's true. The gopis do not care for their own pleasures or pains. All their physical and mental activities are directed towards offering enjoyment to Lord Krishna. They renounce everything for Krishna. They have pure attachment to giving Krishna pleasure. Right, so they have attachment to giving Krishna pleasure. Right? Oh my beloved gopis, you have renounced... Oh, no, this is a quote here. Oh my beloved gopis, you have renounced social customs, scriptural injunctions, and your relatives for my sake. I disappeared behind you only to increase your concentration upon me. Since I disappeared for your benefit, you should not be displeased with me. Footnote 45. This text of Srimad Bhagavatam 10.32.21 was spoken by Lord Krishna when he returned to the arena of the rasa dance.
Mm-hmm.
Now it was. Right? Mm-hmm. Lord Krishna has a promise from before to reciprocate with his devotees according to the way they worship him. Quote, in whatever way my devotees surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects. O son of Prita, Srila Prabhupada. Krishna was never ungrateful to the gopis. For as he declares to Arjuna in this verse from the Bhagavad Gita 4.11, he reciprocates with his devotees in proportion to the transcendental loving service they render unto him. Everyone follows the path that leads them towards him, but there are different degrees of progress on that path. And the Lord is realized in proportion to one's advancement. Right? So how much you see the Lord, or you just see his energies, or you just see the metaphysical, the gross energies, like this. The path is one, but the progress in approaching the ultimate goal is different. And therefore, the proportion of realization of this goal, namely the absolute personality of Godhead, is also different. The gopis attain the highest goal, and Lord Chaitanya affirmed that there is no method of worshipping God higher than that followed by the gopis. Right, so just as he rewards, so if you follow in the footsteps of the gopis, that mood of full surrender, then that there is no path, there is no method higher than this. Okay. Next verse. That promise has been broken by the worship of the gopis, as Lord Krishna himself admits. Quote, O gopis, I am not able to repay my debt for your spotless service, even within a lifetime of Brahma. Your connection with me is beyond reproach. You will worship me, cutting off all domestic ties, which are difficult to break. Therefore, please let your own glorious deeds be your compensation. Footnote 46. This verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.32.22 was spoken by Sri Krishna himself when he returned to the gopis upon hearing their songs of separation. Now, whatever affection we see the gopis show for their own bodies, know it for certain to be only for the sake of Lord Krishna. So, whatever they're doing, taking care of themselves or anything, it's just so that they'll look nice for Krishna. That's their only point. We see is that when the gopis dress Radharani very nicely, when they show her the mirror, she becomes impatient to meet Krishna so that Krishna can enjoy that beauty. So it's not for herself. Srila Prabhupada, the self-love of Godhead exhibited by the gopis cannot have any parallel. We should not, therefore, misunderstand the carefulness of the gopis in their personal decoration. The gopis dressed themselves as beautifully as possible just to make Krishna happy by seeing them. They had no ulterior desires. They dedicated their bodies and everything they possessed to the service of Sri Krishna, taking it for granted that their bodies were meant for his enjoyment. They dressed themselves with the understanding that Krishna would be happy by seeing and touching them. Right? So they make it very nice for Krishna. Right? The gopis think, I have offered this body to Lord Krishna. He is its owner, and it brings him enjoyment. Krishna finds joy in seeing and touching this body. It is, end quote, it is for this reason that they cleanse and decorate their bodies. Quote, O Arjuna, there are no greater receptacles of deep love for me than the gopis who cleanse and decorate their bodies because they consider them mine. Footnote 47. This verse was spoken by Lord Krishna in the Adi Purana. There is another wonderful feature of the emotion of the gopis. Its power is beyond the comprehension of the intelligence. When the gopis see Lord Krishna, they derive unbounded bliss, although they have no desire for such pleasure. Gopis taste a pleasure 10 million times greater than the pleasure Lord Krishna derives from seeing them. So we see this 10 million comes up quite a lot, quite consistently used. Yeah. So Krishna's using that, the acharyas are using that, so seems to be the standard exchange rate. Yes.
Is it what they call 40?
Let's see, 10 million. Yes, one koti is 10 million. Srila Prabhupada, the wonderful characteristic of the gopis are beyond imagination. They have no desire for personal satisfaction. Yet, when Krishna is happy by seeing them, that happiness of Krishna makes the gopis a million times more happy than Krishna himself. The gopis have, next verse, the gopis have no inclination for their own enjoyment, and yet their joy increases. That is indeed a contradiction, right? They're not looking for that, that's not why they're doing it. And so that they're becoming happy by it is not their motive. But that happiness keeps increasing. Right? For this contradiction, I see only one solution. The joy of the gopis lies in the joy of their beloved Krishna. Right? So because they're working for Krishna, then he becomes happy. That makes them more happy. Then he becomes happier by that. So it's that the joy of the gopis is their joy in seeing that joy in Krishna. Srila Prabhupada. The situation of the gopis is perplexing, for although they did not want personal happiness, it was imposed upon them. The solution to this perplexity is that Sri Krishna's sense of happiness is limited by the happiness of the gopis. Devotees at Vrindavan therefore try to serve the gopis, namely Radharani and her associates. One gains the favor of the gopis, he easily gains the favor of Krishna, because on the recommendation of the gopis, Krishna at once accepts the service of a devotee. Lord Chaitanya therefore wanted to please the gopis instead of Krishna. But his contemporaries misunderstood him, and for this reason Lord Chaitanya renounced the order of household life and became a sannyasi. Right? Because otherwise they would put it all together and you get this Gauranga Nagari and all this kind of jazz. So then he became a sannyasi, then more difficult to be to misunderstand.
The three desires, the first desire is to understand the nature of the love of Srimati Radharani. Can we say that comes under Sangandha, and this is like for the tasting of the love of the gopis, this is the priority among the three categories.
It means this one would be the third.
Yes.
And the middle one would be, because it means the sweetness. The sweetness is that variety of interactions and everything like that that comes up from the aspect of rasa, because they mention in there, they mention all the vibhava, anubhava, and all that. So that means the interaction, the pastime itself generates that. So there is the love, that's the basis of it. And then, what is that unlimited taste that is being gained from that? That would be here. Yes, basically you could say like that. So that also brings up the whole, to experience the selfless love of the gopis. So this is the experience. One is the love, then this is the experience. And then that ever-increasing sweetness because of the interaction. So you can say, yes, Samandavi Dayam Pyojan, because everything's going to come in these categories anyway. And then that gives rise to, the first one gives rise to the external form of the Sankirtan movement. The second one of in the cultivation of the devotees, you know, the interaction with the devotees. The third of the devotees being, you know, appreciating and tasting, you know, the glories of the holy name and the pastimes of the Lord. Certainly, so those three same features that come there. So the point is if you have the other one comes with it. So to reject the external, then that's foolish. Like that. Because you see, he's tasting all these three in the Sankirtan movement. He's out on Hari Nam, he's tasting these. Right? You know, so, yeah. Next verse. When Lord Krishna sees the gopis, his joy increases, and his unparalleled sweetness increases also. Right? So his joy increases, that means his sweetness increases. Right? So what does that mean? The gopis' joys will increase. That means his, it just is an unlimited, you know, competition. The gopis think, Krishna has obtained so much pleasure by seeing me, that though that thought increases the fullness and beauty of their faces and bodies. The beauty of Lord Krishna increases at the sight of the beauty of the gopis. And the more the gopis see Lord Krishna's beauty, the more their beauty increases. In this way, a competition takes place between them in which no one acknowledges defeat. It'll go on eternally. Krishna, however, derives pleasure from the beauty and good qualities of the gopis. When the gopis see his pleasure, the joy of the gopis increases. Therefore, we find that the joy of the gopis nourishes the joy of Lord Krishna. For that reason, the fault of lust is not present in their love. Right? So we see here, that's why I say what this, you have to follow in the footsteps of these gopis. Because they, just by seeing them, Krishna gets pleasure. Right? Then they interact, they do all these, the different moods. Then Krishna gets pleasure from that. They seeing his pleasure, that increases then their beauty and feminine attractiveness, which increases his pleasure. So everything that they're doing in the way of that femininity is to increase Krishna's pleasure. Yes. Right? It's not about themselves, what they're getting. Otherwise they'd think, yeah, this is great, and I'm so happy. Yes. No, it just keeps, a competition is taking place. Right? Srila Prabhupada. By looking at the beautiful gopis, Krishna becomes enlivened. And this enlivens the gopis, whose youthful faces and bodies blossom. This competition of increasing beauty between the gopis and Krishna, which is without limitations, is so delicate that sometimes mundane moralists mistake these dealings to be purely amorous. But these affairs are not at all mundane, because the gopis' intense desire to satisfy Krishna surcharges the entire scene with pure love of Godhead, with not a spot of sexual indulgence. Right? Because they're pointing out, it's about them pleasing Krishna. That's the whole point. While we point out, lust is the benefits you'll get. Because it's something you want, if that becomes arranged, then you consider yourself happy. Right? Mm-hmm. This is the whole position. But here, it's that seeing Krishna happy, that's what makes them happy. And then becoming happy, Krishna becomes more happy. So you can see is they're only trying to please Krishna, because it doesn't stop with themselves. As we say, there's no one admits defeat. So it just keeps going. Next.
They have no personal happiness. It's important then. The happiness is...
It's always in Krishna, yeah. Yes, so they just take it for granted. They belong to Krishna, so therefore they're going to act in a way to please Krishna. Right? They belong to Krishna, now they may have a mood that I am Krishna, Krishna's mine. That's the attitude. Yes. But the point that they belong to Krishna, you know, their body is for Krishna's pleasure, that's just their nature. So makes sense. Next verse. I worship Lord Keshava. Coming back from the forest of Braja, he is worshipped by the gopis, who mount the roofs of their palaces and meet him on the path with 100 manners of dancing glances and gentle smiles. The corners of his eyes wander like large black bees around the gopis' breasts. Footnote 48. This statement appears in the Keshavastika 8 of the Stavamala compiled by Srila Rupa Goswami. There is another natural symptom of the gopi's love that shows it to be without a trace of lust. The love of the gopis nourishes the sweetness of Lord Krishna. That sweetness in turn increases their love, for they are greatly satisfied. The happiness of the abode of love is in the happiness of the object of that love. This is not a relationship of desire for personal gratification. Whenever there is unselfish love, that is its style. The reservoir of love derives pleasure when the lovable object is pleased. When the pleasure of love interferes with the service of Lord Krishna, the devotee becomes angry towards such ecstasy. Right? So it's not, if it comes up, it gets in the way, it blocks their being able to serve Krishna. Yeah. So in other words, when the ashraya there, then the relationship of the sweetness of the vishaya, then that flow, then that is what's wonderful. But if the happiness derived from that exchange gets in the way of the service, then they won't be interested in that. Yes.
I think one example is one of the servants of Krishna when he's planning.
Yes.
He becomes very much overcome and tears is coming and curses because he's not able to do his service properly.
Yes, he can't care. Yes, very nice. Srila Prabhupada. As mentioned above, the gopis are the predominated lovers and Sri Krishna is the predominator, the beloved. The love of that predominated, of the predominated, nourishes the love of the predominator. The gopis had no desire for selfish enjoyment. Their feelings of happiness was indirect, for it was dependent on the pleasure of Krishna. Causeless love of Godhead is always so. Such pure love is possible only when the predominated is made happy by the happiness of the predominator. Such unadulterated love is exemplified when the lover deprecates her happiness and service that hinders her from discharging it. So if it gets in the way, then you don't get. So in other words, if we're looking at that aspect of aparoksha, it's just being experienced. But if you notice it, then that service stops.
Yes.
So you have to go back to the other. So there's no time for enjoying it, because enjoying it, you have to step out of it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You understand? So they just don't step out of it.
Yes.
It's just about Krishna's happiness. Sri Daruka did not relish the ecstatic feelings of love, for they caused his limbs to become stunned and thus obstructed his service of fanning Lord Krishna. Footnote 49. This is the verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3.2.62. That's your example. Right? The lotus-eyed Radharani powerfully condemned the ecstatic love that caused a flow of tears that hindered her sight of Govinda. Footnote 50. This is the verse also from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 2.3.54. Furthermore, pure devotees never forsake the loving service of Lord Krishna to aspire for their own personal pleasure through the five kinds of liberation. Quote, just as the celestial waters of the Ganges flow unobstructed into the ocean, so when my devotees simply hear of me, their minds come to me, who reside in the hearts of all. These are the characteristics of transcendental loving service to Purushottama, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is causeless, and it cannot be obstructed in any way. My devotees do not accept Salokya, Sharshti, Sarupya, Samipya, or oneness with me, even if I offer these liberations. In preference, they won't accept them in preference to serving me. Footnote 51. These three verses from Srimad Bhagavatam 3.29, 11 through 13 are spoken by Lord Krishna in the form of Kapila Dev. Quote, my devotees haven't fulfilled their desires by serving me. I do not accept. My devotees have fulfilled their desires by serving me. Do not accept the four kinds of salvation that are easily earned by such service. Why then should they accept any pleasures that are lost in the course of time? Right, because those things, those are just gone. Pleasure means you're going to acknowledge that it's there and then be focused on where you gain the pleasure and it's going to move into the past. But if you're always dealing with the present, you're only pleasing Krishna and then interacting with Krishna. So therefore, they're not going to accept these external pleasures because they just move into the past. While Ananda, that's always present. Right? So it's always that pleasing Krishna. Srila Prabhupada. This verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 9.4.67 was spoken by the Lord in connection with the characteristics of Maharaj Ambarisha. Merging the existence of the Absolute is as temporary as living in the celestial kingdom. Both of them are controlled by time. Neither position is permanent. Good.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.